loud and clear.
From the studios of Radio Sputnik in downtown Washington, D.C., it's Loud and Clear. We take you inside the news 5 days a week. It's happening, and it's happening now. I'm Brian Becker, and I'm joined in studio by John Kiriakou. The House of Representatives is set to vote on a provision that would reauthorize the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, while President Donald Trump appeared to torpedo his administration's own position on the act. Well, maybe that was temporary. Meanwhile, Democrats will go it alone on their Russia investigation as Republicans in Congress are reluctant to chase the Russian boogeyman. We are joined from Maryland by Bill Binney. He is a former NSA technical director who became a legendary national security whistleblower. And we're joined from Minnesota by Colleen Raleigh. She is a former FBI special agent who in 2002 was named Time Magazine's Person of the Year along with two other whistleblowers. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you for having me.
Hi there.
Hey, thanks, Colleen and Bill. Bill Binney, again, the lay public, the broader public, they don't know what the FISA Act is or what 702 is. Let's first just frame the issue before we get into what's actually happening right now.
Okay, well, FISA was actually the way NSA supplements the upstream collection that they do inside the United States and around the world. In other words, they go to the service providers and ask for all data on any given specific targets. And here they're doing it out in the open, where they this is the charade. Okay, they're trying to make it look like they're obeying the law, when in fact they've got the full collection off the fiber lines in the background. But if, in case they miss something, they go to the companies and ask for all their data on specific individuals. And they declare that, and so therefore that means that people can review that, and, oh, yeah, that looks like they're going after genuine targets, when in fact they collect all the data on everybody and they store it and search it. That's what's been going on with inside the United States. The main program they do that with is the Fairview upstream collection system, and that's AT&T. And it's got about 80 to 100 tap points inside the United States, the fiber lines. Whereas if they were only after fibers, only after foreigners on the fibers, all they'd have to do is tap the 11 surface points where all the transoceanic cables come into the United States along the coast. If they tap those, they'd get all the foreigner data coming into the U.S. or going out to them from the U.S. or transiting the U.S. But instead, they have all these tap points distributed with the population right across the United States, and that means the target is U.S. population, not foreigners. And that's where President Trump was really targeted. He used the wrong word. He called it a tap. It wasn't a tap. It was a part of this bulk acquisition of data on everybody. And it was a matter of targeting him in that bulk data.
You know, let's repeat this, because this is so critically important. It's something that every single American should know. It should be taught in every school across this country. Our government is spying on us. They are identifying us as potential threats, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but someday we may pose a threat. And so our government is collecting every scrap of data on us that it can. I think that's something that Americans don't understand. And I'll tell you one thing that I resent, too, is the weakness of the media. As soon as this vote was taken in the House of Representatives today, and the vote wasn't close, it was a margin of something like 90 votes in the House.
256 to 164.
See? 88 votes. The Los Angeles Times issued a breaking news press release saying that the vote was close and that it had barely passed. And that is just not true. And this tells me that the media is not doing its job and the congressional oversight committees are not doing their jobs. When those of us who care about civil liberties have to look to the likes of the Tea Party caucus or Rand Paul for leadership on this and for protection of our civil liberties, I don't even know what to say. It's as though the fight is lost.
Well, I mean, the entire Congress that voted for that is violating their oath of office to defend the Constitution.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
It's a direct violation of the First, Fourth, and they use it in court of law, Fifth and Sixth Amendments of the Constitution. And, you know, it's an obvious lie. If you just look at the Fairview system, you know that the obvious target is the U.S. population. And it was done under Cheney, who wanted to know everything about everybody and who opposed him. And since then, this data was used against the Tea Party by the IRS, who also have access to the data in NSA, And so does the FBI and the DEA, and they're arresting people for common internal crime inside the United States. And it's only now coming out in some courts of law when they are getting caught using NSA data to convict people. So it's only starting to break now, and some of the courts are starting to do the right thing.
Colleen Raleigh, go ahead.
Well, I think Bill has done a great job of talking about the technical side, so let me talk about the legal aspects. In addition to being an agent for 13 years in the latter part of my career, I taught Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, Sixth Amendment, First Amendment. I was the legal counsel in the Minneapolis division. And one of the big things, of course, is how to demonstrate probable cause in an affidavit, both under the Fourth Amendment and also under FISA, which is different. And so if we back all the way up to 1978, when the FISA law was passed as a compromise, it was a compromise because of all of the abuses that the church and Pike committees had discovered, that J. Edgar Hoover had been doing for many years, black bag jobs, surveilling American Martin Luther King Jr., as well as feminists and anti-war activists and everybody else. And so he was doing these things under what he would say was the inherent war powers, which John Yoo calls, I think they call it the second article powers, whatever, but it's commander in chief just has the inherent, and especially in a martial law type situation, emergency in wartime, to do anything they want. The Constitution just goes up in shreds when John Yoo has this opinion, and others do as well. Well, that's what was going on before in the Vietnam War up until about 1978. So there was a big debate, and all they could do was compromise at the time and say, well, we don't want to make it too hard for national security purposes, intelligence gathering. So we will say that you go to a secret court. Basically, it's one judge. You go to with a declaration, not an affidavit, to a secret judge. And so this was this FISA law. Now, the big thing that occurred in 1978, I wouldn't say it actually occurred in 78 with FISA, but as the years went on, after the FISA law was passed, it came to be understood that there was what they called the wall between what Bill just described, when you're just doing Fourth Amendment investigation of a bank robber, a plain old crime, and then what would go on when you were in the world of intelligence gathering. Okay, so they were slightly different, and they called it the wall. Today, I just listened to C-SPAN, and the end of the debate is Ryan, the House Majority Leader, giving a speech. And basically, if you parse through what he said, he just said, there's no more wall. We saw that was a big mistake. We weren't able to connect the dots. And so now the United States is going to look at Americans just as they would look at terrorists. That was, he said this in a much more sneaky way. But if you listen to his talk, what he was saying is that there is no more difference between what J. Edgar Hoover was doing before the FISA law passed. So we have gone all the way back to that era where there was this way around. In fact, in the FBI, it was called the smell test, if it doesn't pass the smell test, because you're going around the Fourth Amendment. And that's what now this vote, and of course, if the Senate goes along, which is it's expected to do, it looks like we'll go all the way back to before 1978, when essentially what Bill is talking about, has been going on anyways. It's been going on since they turned it on after 9/11. But it's now being legalized, perfectly legalized.
I would maintain, though, that all of that, what Ryan said there, is a lie. We were able to connect the dots even in the 90s. That wasn't a problem at all. Plus, they're still violating the Constitution. Any law they try to pass that violates the Constitution is not a law. So that's still, I maintain that's still illegal.
I have to agree with you, Bill. If it violates the Constitution, then, I mean, that's what the courts are for. The courts are supposed to be making these decisions, and they haven't been. And so it leaves us in this position of limbo where we all know that this stuff is unconstitutional. yet the government continues to collect it and to store it.
Right. I'm supporting four lawsuits challenging the constitutionality of what they're doing, and the government is slow rolling it because they don't want it going into court.
Because they know they'll lose.
They're still lying to the public, and our mainstream media is going along with that lie.
Absolutely true.
The Fourth Amendment, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures, shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. I mean, the Fourth and the First Amendment, you know, the essential part of what Americans consider to be cherished freedoms. And what Bill Binney and what Colleen is saying, John, is that the Fourth Amendment are just so many words on a piece of paper.
Yes.
Because of principally this practice.
Yes. I think Colleen is absolutely right on this thing. If we don't respect the Constitution and live by its precepts, then we lose its protections and we have only ourselves to blame.
I want to go to both of you, Colleen and Bill, and talk about Donald Trump today. He was again active on a Twitter. He said 6 hours ago, this was before the vote, obviously, House votes on controversial FISA Act today. This is the act that may have been used with the help of the discredited and phony dossier to so badly surveil and abuse the Trump campaign by the previous administration and others. Now, that was 6 hours ago, and immediately that created a huge storm in the media. It seemed like Donald Trump was suggesting Congress should not pass this renewal. And two hours later, Donald Trump sent another tweet. With that being said, I have personally directed the fix to the unmasking process since taking office, and today's vote is about foreign surveillance of foreign bad guys on foreign land. We need it. Get smart! Exclamation point. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, let me add a little clarity here. The collection database inside NSA is not masked or in any way minimized. So in other words, all the data about every individual is there in the clear for anybody to look at. And that's what FBI, DEA, IRS, and a number of other agencies are going into and looking at directly with no oversight or attempted oversight at all. That's been a lie from the beginning, too. And the idea that they couldn't separate out communications from bad guys or anything else has been a lie, too. We were doing that back in the 90s. So technically, they're lying through their teeth. And Trump was absolutely right to include 702 because they would go to 702 on anybody on his team and ask for any supplemental data from any of the existing service providers to supplement the upstream that they've already got, just to make sure they get all the data. And they could do that, without basically any oversight.
Yeah, Colleen, jump in if you would.
Yeah, I think Trump had it right the first time. Going back to the line, Ryan and others, I think, tried to bring up some examples of where this collection has saved the day. You know, it's found a terrorist. And one representative, I don't remember who it was, actually used the case of Timothy McVeigh. So he actually used an American terrorist as his example of how we could save the day by gathering this information. And what Trump, and of course there's been others, he's not the only politician who thought he was in the club and said, oh, it's great, we'll use this on foreigners and it won't ever impact me. You know, this is where all of this comes from, this, I would say, political nonchalance of politicians who think, oh, well, we're just, you know, I have nothing to hide. Well, quite a few of them, including the latest being Trump, have got caught up in being surveilled. You know, again, go back to your, before 1972 when Hoover died. That's where Hoover got his power. He was spying on all of the high level officials and presidents and everyone else in Washington, D.C. Again, I would predict that that's what we're seeing actually in some of the spying on the Trump campaign. And you would think that people would learn from this and they'd say, oh, well, you know, maybe it isn't such a wise thing to create a rule and then think somehow I am in the exceptional club where this won't be used on me. And I think that's where almost all of our politicians, and especially the ones who voted no to the Amash, Amendment today. I think that's where they were all coming from, because they think that it won't happen to them. Now, they Jane Harman got caught up in a conversation of,
she sure did.
You know, really something she shouldn't be proud of, and others have too. And we don't know. The public doesn't even know about all of the conversations that Bill is talking about, where the NSA and the FBI, you know, what I would call the little combination now of deep state, some of these Comey figures and Mueller figures learn these things, and they say, well, maybe we can handle this. We're not going to be charging anybody criminally, but we'll just go in and tip the hat that we know this about them. In fact, if you go back to January of 2017, that's essentially what Comey was doing with Trump. He was saying, look what we got on you. Look at all this dirt that has been gathered on you, and it's going to be leaked to the media. Now, that's what Hoover did all the time. And the reason this is kind of a blackmail leverage, the representatives that gave talks today that said this is really kind of an ending of our rule of law, our democracy, whatever, because now you let blackmail leverage all the stuff that J. Edgar Hoover was doing. You let it all back in. So those people were totally correct today. And unfortunately, it looks like it's going in the unconstitutional direction.
One of the things we should clarify, too, is your comment about Jane Harman. Jane Harman was the chairwoman of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. And she was caught up in a telephone conversation with, I think it was members of AIPAC, talking about Israel. And that information was leaked. And then you have to ask yourself, why is our government intercepting the communications of a sitting member of Congress, one who's the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, and American citizens who are working for a lobbying group? I guess that's a topic for a different day. But I wanted to say another thing, too. And I think both Colleen and Bill would agree with me that the nature of organizations like the FBI, the CIA, NSA, is to push the envelope as far as they possibly can just to see what it is that they can get away with. You know, they rely on the oversight committees to push back and to say, no, you can't do that. No, that's illegal. No, that's not been approved by the White House or whatever. But we found ourselves in an age post 9/11 where the oversight committees never push back. And so we have these programs where NSA is spying on Americans, FBI is spying on Americans, the CIA is probably spying on Americans, certainly conducting operations that 16 years ago would have been patently illegal and now are just a part of the daily grind over at the CIA. We need leadership on Capitol Hill to remind these organizations that they cannot trample our civil liberties, and we're not seeing that kind of leadership.
I agree totally, John. And the point that is, we won't be able to stop this not until we start putting some people in jail, indicting them and putting them in jail. Otherwise, you know, they're going to continue with this stuff. I mean, looking back is the only way to fix this. All this business about only looking forward, that's a sham. Let's just ignore all the crimes that we've committed in the past. And then the next organization, the next president's going to say the same thing. Let's not look back. We'll just keep going. And, you know, I blame it all really on Gerry Ford, who pardoned Nixon when he was going to be indicted for the crimes he committed using the same agencies, NSA, CIA, and FBI. And when he did that, that meant that every president had a get-out-of-jail-free card. It was the next president. Because if the president didn't pardon one another, I mean, they couldn't be able to do what they wanted to do or what they felt they needed to do. So I blame it all on Gerry Ford. That's why I didn't vote for him.
That's the voice of Bill Binney. He's joining us from Maryland. He's a former NSA technical director, became a legendary national security whistleblower. And we're joined from Minnesota by Colleen Rowley. She is a former FBI special agent who in 2002 was named Time Magazine Person of the Year, along with two other whistleblowers. We're talking about the congressional vote today, the vote in the House regarding FISA and 702. Bill Binney, I want to go back and sort of frame the question based on what Colleen was discussing. And I want to ask you both this question. Colleen is referencing the fact that J. Edgar Hoover, as a matter of everyday operations, was you know, collecting dirt on all the politicians so that behind the scenes he could bring any politician down. And thus you had the FBI, the the secret police, in a way, sort of being a determining fact, a determining factor behind the throne of whoever the politician was. And that's in itself a negation of democracy, because the elected officials aren't really in charge. The FBI, which has dirt on them, is really in charge. But then there's another piece to this story, which is then moving the clock forward to 9/11, 2001. What J. Edgar Hoover did as a person, or what other agencies did as leadership decisions, becomes institutionalized. In other words, it's still illegal, but it becomes institutionalized. And Bill Binney, that's where the story kind of picks up again, because within the NSA, you had been at the NSA for a long time. Help the audience understand how 9/11 became a pivotal moment in terms of the switchover, where it's not just the decisions of individual egregious leaders like J. Edgar Hoover, but the policy decision to carry out illegal surveillance, not just on politicians, but on everyone, thus collecting dirt on everyone. Go ahead.
Yeah, let me give you a little background. In World War II, NSA started, or the predecessor of NSA started and continued with NSA, forming in 1952. They started a program called Shamrock. That was a program that they used to monitor all communications into and out of the United States to foreigners. And that was all of it, you know. I mean, the people sending telegrams and so on would send the copies, all of them, to NSA or the people, the predecessor organization. And so that continued even up until the mid-70s when the Church Committee found out about it. And at the same time, they found out that Nixon had directed the CIA, FBI, and NSA, same agencies again, to look at U.S. citizens who objected to his to the war policy or any of the other policies he had. So that was Minaret and NSA, COINTELPRO at FBI, and Chaos at CIA, all doing the same things that they're doing today, but on a much smaller scale. So that's the background of it. So that gives you, and they're collecting all of this data on U.S. citizens. And it's kind of stopped after the Church Committee issued the FISA law. And it actually was still done, I think, slightly in secret, although I can't prove that, up until 2001, when Bush and Cheney came in. But some of the material from the former CEO of Quest, Joe Nocio, he and this is in court record. He had basically brought up the point that NSA approached him on the 27th of February of 2001 and asked him to turn over all the data on his people or anybody that his customers, all of his customers. So that meant, you know, I don't know how many million U.S. citizens. So, but he refused unless they presented a warrant signed by a judge. And as a result, of course, they went into data and tried to find something or fabricate things against it. He told me they fabricated it. I believe him because they did it with us, too. The only difference is we found out about it, and they ran away after we found out. So, but they sent him to jail for 5 years for that. Now, what that meant to every other CEO of every telecom, why, that meant if you don't cooperate, here's what happens to you. So this is the way you threaten the people in the United States. That's what they did. They used the IRS against the Tea Party, against the Occupy group. They disbanded that, you know, and they used against Elliot Spitzer, for example, Jim Risen, Jim Rosen, the Associated Press. This is how you threaten the press. This is how you threaten people in the United States. This is what I'm objecting to. This is totally unconstitutional, and these people belong in jail for what they're doing.
Absolutely true. I actually believe that story too. I believe he was set up. You know, this is a guy who was really standing alone before the issue became a major national issue. I think most Americans weren't thinking about their own telecommunications privacy. He was, and as Bill rightly pointed out, he said he was not going to turn over this information on his customers, on his subscribers, to the federal government without a warrant. And so the next thing you know, he's in prison. That's the way our government has operated since the passage of the Patriot Act.
Colleen Rowley, let's turn to you. We have about 3 minutes before a break, and so we may have to pick this up after the break.
I want to add something to the end of this here, because You know, I've read a couple. I haven't read all of John Yoo's Office of Legal Counsel opinions. But you want to talk about unconstitutional. After 9/11, when they secretly, even before they invaded Afghanistan, they say it's a war. So as soon, well, I think really within days, when they say it's war, that then allows you to say, well, in wartime, we don't have to follow the old Constitution. It's just a, it's not a suicide. But they had all these little funny statements. They said it's the Constitution is not a suicide pact. They made all these ends justify the means arguments, just like torture. You know, we have to torture in order to save lives. They made all those same types of arguments in days. And John Yoo went back and wrote these convoluted OLC opinions along with one other senior guy. A couple of them basically said that now that we're in war, and I don't know if they called it martial law, but martial law is a misnomer. It's a contradiction in terms, because basically when you have martial law, and that's what it was after 9/11, because Congress, okay, today at least we saw a debate. At least we saw mouthing things. Sure, they lied a lot. A lot of them lied, but at least they were mouthing things. After 9/11, you did this secretly, no debate, and he just said, we're not following the Constitution anymore. And he said it in a bunch of Office of Legal Counsel memos.
And there was no declaration of war by Congress.
Yeah,
and, that's right.
And here he is, a law professor, writing legal memos saying something that's patently illegal, which would be torture, is legal, and thus it's legal because he writes this legal memo. We're in this Alice in Wonderland sort of reality turned upside down situation. But the other part of it too, and I want to go in this direction, part of it too is they couldn't get away with all of this without the complicity of especially the corporate owned mainstream media. You talk about James Risen, he was the one who was, and others, I think Eric Lichtblau in the New York Times, were understanding finally because of inside sources, whistleblowers who came forward about the NSA mass data collection operation, the secret spying, warrantless spying. That's why we got this 702, I believe, was to make it legal, to make something illegal legal. And the New York Times had this story, this shocker, that the Bush administration was spying on the American people. And the New York Times sat on the story. They wouldn't let it be published. The New York Times and this and the NSA and the CIA and Condoleezza Rice were meeting with the New York Times and they agreed not to run the story. I mean, we had the truth earlier, but the truth didn't come out. And only as a consequence of the fact that the truth did come out because of Edward Snowden, because of Bill Binney, because of this long line of truth tellers and whistleblowers, the truth finally comes out. But up until then, you have the Congress and the media going along with the intelligence agencies, which they call the intelligence community. It doesn't seem like a community, but anyway, we're going to come back and explore some of those issues after we take a short break. You're listening to Loud and Clear. We'll be right back.
Loud and Clear.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR.
Loud and Clear.
Welcome back to Loud and Clear. I'm Brian Becker.
And I'm John Kiriakou.
The House of Representatives voted today on a provision that reauthorized the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. While Donald Trump earlier appeared to be torpedoing the administration's own position and then he changed gears, we are joined from Maryland by Bill Binney. He is a former NSA technical director who became a legendary national security whistleblower. And we're joined from Minnesota by Colleen Raleigh. She is a former FBI special agent who in 2002 was named Time Magazine Person of the Year, along with two other whistleblowers. John Kiriakou, I think Bill Binney hit it on the head when he said, if we never look backward, if we're only looking forward, if each politician or each government says, oh, whatever bad thing happened in the past, no matter how illegal it was, whether it was a war of aggression or torture or secret prisons or mass surveillance on the American people violating the First and Fourth Amendment and other amendments, no matter how bad it was, let's look forward. And thus, there is no accountability, no accountability whatsoever. And that means the next group can continue to do the same illegal actions with impunity.
That's right. Bill's correct in that. And I think that it was Bill who, the last time he was on this show, said that if you're going to look forward and not backward as a policy, then you need to establish a truth commission, because the truth has to be out there. You can't just pretend that something bad didn't happen. You can't not learn from your mistakes. But that's what we're seeing with our government. We have not learned from the mistakes we made after 9/11.
And in terms of looking backward, I want to play a short audio clip. It's now kind of famous. It's from it's you'll hear the voice, I think, of Ron Wyden, senator from Oregon.
Yes.
And the director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, committing what many described as perjury in response to a question from Senator Wyden at a hearing in March 2013. Of course, we knew it was really perjury, or seemed like it to the average person, after Edward Snowden's revelations. But let's listen to this short audio clip.
Last summer, the NSA director was at a conference, and he was asked a question about the NSA surveillance of Americans. He replied, and I quote here, "The story that we have millions or hundreds of millions of dossiers on people is completely false." The reason I'm asking the question is, having served on the committee now for a dozen years, I don't really know what a dossier is in this context. So what I wanted to see is if you could give me a yes or no answer to the question, does the NSA collect any type of data at all on millions or hundreds of millions of Americans?
No, sir.
It does not.
Not wittingly. There are cases where they could inadvertently, perhaps, collect, but not wittingly.
Not wittingly, Bill Binney.
No, it's deliberately. It had nothing to do with witting. And by the way, they do have dossiers in the computer. It's a matter of calling it up. That's what they're doing when they target people. In other words, they collect all the data, and content as well as metadata, and all the relationships that anybody has. And then when they go in and say, give me everything on this person, they bring it up and put everything in time sequence so they can see all the electronic transactions between a given person and anybody else they're connected to over a long, whatever period of time you want to define. And it's all done by software.
Colleen Rowley, that was perjury, wasn't it? I mean, we're not, I don't want to, you know, go past where we can go, but it sounds like he's lying. And I think he said later, he used some sort of weird, twisted formulation when Snowden's revelations made it quite clear that what he was saying was not true. He said it was the least untrue thing he could say, or something like that.
Yeah. Yep. And he came up with an excuse. You know, if you go to the problem of the politicians not telling the truth, it's become like the water in the Washington, D.C. It's almost like they drink this water their first day there. And if you remember, we even had Bill Clinton arguing what the meaning of the word is.
Right.
That was a pretty flimsy excuse for lying. They don't probably get too much more flimsier than Bill Clinton's excuse. But once those precedents are set, as Bill just said, once you get away with outright lying and there's no consequences, and in fact, when you do terribly unlawful things, not just deceitful things, but even things that have resulted in hundreds of thousands of people being dying and certainly being killed, tortured, etc. When you do those things and then you get rewarded, it's even worse than lack of accountability. John Yoo, for instance, who was one of the main perpetrators that began a lot of this, he's gone on to get tenure at, you know, there were a couple of quick protests against him when he started at Berkeley. And now he's a tenured professor and he goes around, you know, he gives speeches, probably gets a lot of money. A lot of these people do revolving doors into think tanks and they get hundreds of thousands of dollars. Condi Rice was here. She got $200,000 for a speech. So that's the problem. We are rewarding, as a country, the most unlawful, terrible behavior, and then, of course, hoping that it's going to change. I'm kind of getting so cynical now that I almost think the only way it will change is if there are more instances, for instance, where a high-level person like Trump, let's say that FBI agent Stroke, You know, he gets on the other end of it. He thinks he's in the club and he can do all these illegal things. But when he gets on the other end of it, slowly but surely, people are going to realize this is actually more than civil liberties. This is destroying the whole structure, the constitutional structure and democratic structure of government right now. And it's just a question of time before people realize it.
You know, I want to talk too about the fallout from some of these programs. We talked the last time Bill and Colleen were on the show about prosecutions and about how the Justice Department can use the information that is gathered, what we believe to be unconstitutionally, illegally, and used in prosecutions against Americans. We talked last week about Robert Jackson, the former Attorney General of the United States. He wrote something in 1941 that is still so salient today. I think every American ought to hear it. And I hope our listeners will indulge me. It's not very long. He wrote in 1941, "If the prosecutor is obliged to choose his cases, it follows that he can choose his defendants. Therein is the most dangerous power of the prosecutor, that he will pick people that he thinks he should get rather than pick cases that need to be prosecuted. With the law books filled with a great assortment of crimes, a prosecutor stands a fair chance of finding at least a technical violation of some act on the part of almost anyone. In such a case, it is not a question of discovering the commission of a crime and then looking for the man who has committed it. It is a question of picking the man and then searching the law books or putting investigators to work to pin some offense on him. It is in this realm in which the prosecutor picks some person whom he dislikes or desires to embarrass, or selects some group of unpopular persons and then looks for an offense, that the greatest danger of abuse of prosecuting power lies. That was true in 1941. It's especially true and dangerous today when our prosecutors have literally at their fingertips virtually our entire electronic lives, that they can just call up like a Google search our metadata, who you've called. Have you called an abortion provider? Have you called an illicit lover? Have you called a doctor to deal with some sort of embarrassing medical situation? I mean, you only need the metadata to piece somebody's life together and then to make an assumption that some sort of crime was committed, therein justifying an investigation. This is a very slippery slope, and it's one that's hard to turn away from.
Yeah, and it's not just that, John. If you looked at the Vault 7 material, you can also see, look at a similar to the Marvel program, they can go in and fabricate evidence against you in that data, so they can manipulate it any way they want.
Yeah, well, let's, Bill, why don't you just explain, we've done it multiple times on this show, but just briefly, what the Vault 7 release showed?
Well, fundamentally, it showed hundreds of millions of lines of code, source code, outlining attacks that the CIA has available to them. Most of them, I think, they got from NSA or GCHQ or both. But what it meant was that they had the ability, using these attack routines, to penetrate firewalls, penetrate operating systems, penetrate, you know, get through any kind of barrier in any server or a switch in the world. And so that what that meant was they knew all the things that the system was weak, so they knew how to break in. And they left them that way because that meant they could continue to see what people were doing. That was how they were gathering their intelligence, you know. It's like if you have an open Windows where you can go in and read something from somebody, you don't want to close the window. So you don't want to tell anybody about the weakness because they might fix it. If they fix it, they'd have cybersecurity, you know. And they wouldn't be able to read. So that they left all those things run. That was one of the gripes I had against them. That was very short-sighted, finite, stupid thinking.
It should be called the National Insecurity Agency if they're finding vulnerabilities in companies or in government offices or wherever and deliberately not fixing them so that they themselves can exploit them. That creates insecurity, and then of course they lost control of these tools because these tools were hacked. In other words, they're now available to the world.
But it's also one of the main reasons, like, for example, OPM, the Office of Personnel Management, got hacked, and all the people who had ever had a clearance got hacked by the Chinese. So, I mean, you know, it's as if these people think they're so smart that there aren't any other people around the world that have any brains, so they can't figure out these weaknesses. Well, that's just absolutely false, you know? So they're deluding themselves into thinking. And another thing they say as well, we need to collect more data because that's intelligence. This data is intelligence. That's not intelligence. That's just data. Until you understand what the data means, you don't have any intelligence. They don't even understand that. So they've really lost the entire philosophy of what intelligence production is all about.
Colleen Raleigh had mentioned that people are not just not prosecuted and not held accountable, but they're actually rewarded. I'm looking, Colleen, at an op-ed by, yes, John Yoo, co-written by John Yoo on December 4th, 2017. This really, really takes the cake. Again, rewarded. He's now a sage. He's a great, you know, advisor to all things. And then here, I want to read a couple sentences to you because it's just so, I don't know, it's shocking.
It is.
The known facts are too weak to support any federal prosecution. This is of Trump. Not to mention one as momentous as indicting a sitting president. But even if Mr. Trump did illegally conspire to improve relations with Russia, his critics are pursuing their quarry down the wrong path. Impeachment, not criminal prosecution, is the tool for a corrupt sitting president. This by a man who drafted so-called legal memos to authorize the use of torture in secret prisons around the world by the United States. Not only a law professor, not only tenured, but writing op-eds in the New York Times like he is a sage, telling us Donald Trump should be impeached because of wrongdoing, where, of course, George W. Bush should have been impeached. Cheney should have been impeached. John Yoo should have been prosecuted and sent to jail for trying to do something that is patently illegal, which is to use his legal credentials to rationalize and justify a system of torture that hurt so many people in so many countries of the world, killed people, too. Anyway, it's incredulous.
Yeah, in my view, it was grounds for treason against the founding principles of this nation. And that's what he should be charged with, in my view.
You know, people forget what they forget even from last year, let alone, 15, 16 years ago. And without any kind of a real solid accountability record, which is what we don't have. Yeah, the news can carry a story, but in a week or two, that story blows over and people have no remembrance. And this is I sometimes call it United States of amnesia, because the inability to recall any history at all allows this beyond belief level of hypocrisy that we're seeing right now. You know, all we have to do is look at whistleblowers and leaking. They went after Julian Assange and WikiLeaks all those years, probably a secret indictment. All these terrible things that because he leaked documents. Look at Washington, D.C. right now and the leaking going on. I mean, honestly, I think the leaking at these official levels of these high level people is far, far worse than anything WikiLeaks even did. So you're seeing that you're seeing this hypocrisy. And when you put yourself, like Nixon said, if the president does it, it's not illegal. That's Condi Rice thought the same thing about Bush. She said the same thing. Well, when Bush did it, it wasn't illegal because he was the president. Most of the people in government at those levels believe that they're somehow in an exclusive club where they get to make the law and they get to say, you know, they'll never be prosecuted and it's not, you know, they're not doing anything illegal because they're all powerful. That has to change. That has to change. You know, with Nixon being threatened with impeachment, there was a little bit of accountability, even though Gerald Ford pardoned him. That's the last time we've even seen that little bit of accountability. And that's what's put us on this real terrible path of hypocrisy.
And now they're all protected by the Department of Just Us. And we're not a part of that.
Yeah, absolutely true. We're not a part of that. I just don't know where Congress wants to lead us. You know, it's as though we get no leadership from Congress at all. We get these wishy-washy pronouncements of respect for civil rights and civil liberties. And then when things actually come to a vote, like we saw today, we're disappointed every single time. Now, how pathetic is it that we have to rely on the Senate to try to do something about this? You know, we have to rely on the likes of Rand Paul, who, whether we like him or not, whether we like his politics or not, doesn't necessarily have the respect of his colleagues to the point where he can force through legislation or can affect legislation.
You know, we just had Mike Rogers. Well, it's a leak. It's another leak that he's resigning. It's kind of fitting in a way. But I want to play another audio clip. It's Rogers speaking March 20th, 2017, and denying that the U.S. government asked any of the Five Eyes agencies to spy on the Trump campaign in response to a question from Congressman Adam Schiff. Let's listen to Mike Rogers, and then I want to ask Bill Binney and Colleen Raleigh to comment.
President and his spokesman, Sean Spicer, have suggested that British intelligence, through its NSA or GCHQ, wiretapped Mr. Trump on President Obama's behalf. Did you ever request that your counterparts in GCHQ should wiretap Mr. Trump on behalf of President Obama?
No, sir, nor would I. That would be expressly against the construct of the Five Eyes agreement that's been in place for decades.
And the Five Eyes are some of our closest intelligence partners, and Britain is one of them.
Yes, sir.
Have you seen any evidence that anyone else in the Obama administration made such a request?
No, sir. And again, my view is the same as Director Comey. I've seen nothing on the NSA side that we engaged in any such activity, nor that anyone ever asked us to engage in such activity.
Go ahead, Bill Binney.
Well, first of all, they've collected all the data on him and all, on President Trump and all of his people during his campaign and even before that. So, and GCHQ has direct access into the NSA database to do queries using a program called IC Reach. That's also true of the other Five Eyes by now, but they had it back from 2007 on. So they've been able to do that without, and there's no oversight of that anyway. So, and there's no oversight of anything that's done internally in the NSA network about who's querying what particular targets inside the database. Otherwise, you know, I've been arguing that for decades. I first proposed that back in 1992, that we monitor all this stuff so we know who's doing what. And they refused to do that because it would expose all the money transferring and all the corruption involved in NSA. So all the managers opposed that, so it never happened. And so that's the state of it right now inside NSA. And they can't really, they don't monitor anybody who's doing anything there automatically. That's the main problem they have. So as far as I'm concerned, anything they say about that is totally irrelevant. I mean, they have no way of knowing for sure what's going on.
Well, let's keep on this topic. We have another audio clip. It's a former FBI Director James Comey. It's on the same day, March 20th, 2017, same hearings. He says it's his response to a question from, again, Adam Schiff about whether or not President Obama could have ordered his campaign to be, quote, wiretapped, close quote. Let's listen.
The president second stated, quote, is it legal for a sitting president to be wiretapping a race for president prior to an election? Turned down by a court earlier, a new low, unquote. Director Comey, can you answer the president's question? Would it be legal for President Obama to have ordered a wiretap of Donald Trump?
I'm not going to characterize or respond to the tweets themselves. I can tell you in general, as Admiral Rogers and I were just saying, there is a statutory framework in the United States under which courts grant permission for electronic surveillance, either in a criminal case or a national security case, based on a showing of probable cause, carefully overseen. It's a rigorous, rigorous process that involves all three branches of government, and it's one we've lived with since the late 1970s. That's how it works. So no individual in the United States can direct electronic surveillance of anyone. It has to go through an application process, ask a judge. The judge can then make the order.
That was carefully parsed language, of course. They didn't. Go ahead, Colleen.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking when I heard his response. He didn't really answer the question because he interpreted it that Obama would come down personally and put on earphones and listen in to a technical wiretap, which really don't even occur anymore. I mean, if you parse it that way, again, we're going back to Bill Clinton's what is the meaning of the word is. We actually do know now, and we know it from Lindsey Graham's supposed shock when he saw some documents recently in the last few days where he thought FBI declarations, it seems like he thought the FBI's probable cause, I got that in quotes, was misleading. And he claimed to be shocked. Now, he's kind of backtracked from that, and he doesn't apparently want to talk that much about it anymore. But I think that is actually evidence and this is coming right from Lindsey Graham, that there was some paperwork of some sort, official paperwork, and, you know, maybe to cover up unofficial earlier spying, etc. But there was some paperwork, and that it was not according to an affidavit where you have to put in context, you have to explain an informant's track record and their basis of knowledge. These are all legal requirements that go into affidavits. And Lindsey Graham was shocked that this was apparently a very bare-boned one that would have misled. If it went to the FISA court, it would have been misleading. So we actually know that what Comey was answering wasn't exactly honest. He was very much parsing.
Go ahead, Bill.
Well, yeah, I just think that he was answering the official way to do it. There's also an unofficial way that happens, and they don't have any idea who's doing what within that database. So, they have no way of monitoring it either. So that means to me that everything they're saying is just basically disingenuous. And, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, they have no idea who's doing what, even in their own agency.
That's the ugly truth right there.
Yeah. What one thing that has come out in the last couple of days, and I wanted to get both of your opinions on this, Dianne Feinstein released the Fusion GPS president or CEO Simpson, his testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee. And in that testimony, Fusion GPS CEO said that Christopher Steele, the author of the dossier, who had been hired, the dossier digging up dirt against Trump, who had been originally employed, Fusion GPS, by Republican rivals of Trump, and then the DNC, Hillary Clinton picked it up, that Steele himself had gone to the FBI in July 2016 because he was, quote, concerned about collusion between the Russian government and the Trump campaign. Now, that part of that is interesting because he was relying on Russian sources who are probably people he was paying inside of Russia, and he was hired by the Democrats. So you can make the argument that he was colluding with some Russians. But aside from that, later in this testimony from Fusion GPS, Steele says, well, he stopped collaborating with the FBI in October 2016, right before the election, because he was aware by then that the FBI had, quote, someone, or not a quote, but almost a quote, a paraphrase, the FBI had someone inside the Trump campaign talking back to the FBI. Would that suggest that the FBI had actively infiltrated the Trump campaign?
It could be a couple of things. I think I've read at one point where Simpson said it was like a walk-in, like a whistleblower that came in, somebody, an insider in the Trump campaign. That's possible. It's also possible that, and so it wasn't someone actively recruited or coerced by the FBI to begin spying who's already in the campaign. There might have been somebody that walked into the FBI. The other thing is it could easily refer to the Australian ambassador who listened to a drunken, low-level, whatever he was, Papadopoulos, who said that, we heard that there's a lot of emails that Clinton is going to come out. He could be called the insider, too, that corroborated this. So it's hard to know what they're talking about. But the general spying by a sitting president in all different ways, you know, this could be in one way, but there could be other ways, would have to be very well established. If you really, really had a crooked presidential candidate, or, you know, obviously Nixon saying, I'm not crooked, you know, if you really had a crooked president, and then FBI decides to take it on itself to begin investigation, they would have to have, to be honest, a lot more than probable cause. They would have to have proof, almost proof beyond a reasonable doubt. That's just the practical matter. If you look at the Steele dossier, that Steele dossier, which was passed by Steele to a buddy of his in the FBI in Rome in July, and then later, a couple months later in September, he briefs an entire team on it. It doesn't look like it was even investigated by the FBI. Did anyone even check records to see if anything in that Steele dossier that was compiled very quickly by him Did they do any investigation at all? And that's an amazing, amazing situation right now. We had an investigation of a presidential campaign, and no one knows what it even was based on, other than a quote unquote salacious dossier by an opposition research firm. And no one was told the truth about this for a long, long time. And little dribs and drabs are coming out right now, as I mentioned, just a little drib and drab from Lindsey Graham. But no one to this day really knows what was going on. It does not look good on the part of the FBI, though.
One of the things that I'm a little nervous about is if you compare what we're seeing today to the early to mid period of Watergate, certainly Richard Nixon had his supporters, quite vociferous supporters. But by and large, both parties really wanted to get to the bottom of what it was we were looking at in that period. It's so much more partisan today that we have competing investigations. We have one party refusing to participate in the other party's investigation. We have elected officials making accusations against other sitting members of Congress vis-a-vis the investigation. It's as though nothing is going to be able to get done because we just don't trust each other.
Bill Binney, we have 1 minute left. You get the last word. Go ahead.
Well, I think John is absolutely right there. I mean, what they're doing is basically throwing up smoke screens, and that's basically what's happening, so you can't get to the truth. The whole idea is, you know, it's like a Wizard of Oz game. Both parties seem to be playing to an extent. Although I tend to believe that Democrats have more to hide, so that's basically what the evidence is pointing to. But, I mean, all they're doing is saying, you know, don't look over here at the man behind the curtain, you know, pay attention over here. And that's what all these different things are doing and what they're saying. I believe in just going based, what are the facts, line up the facts, and then take it to court and prove whatever you can with the facts. And don't pay any attention to this hearsay or other opinions or any of that kind of crap. It's just crap. You know, so I basically look at Congress as chip pitchers from the country. You know, that's where you're throwing chips around, you know.
All right. We're going to leave it right there. We've been joined from Maryland by William Binney. Bill Binney is a former NSA technical director. He became a legendary national security whistleblower, paid a heavy price. And we've been joined from Minnesota by Colleen Raleigh. She is a former FBI special agent who in 2002 was named Time Magazine Person of the Year, along with two other whistleblowers. You're listening to Loud and Clear. After a short break, we'll be back with the top stories of the day.
Loud and Clear.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR.